And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Our guest today is the late Patty Fink. I guess, right?
Yeah, right. She's a guest today.
You're a guest today. And the inimitable Aaron Moore.
Ha ha ha.
Now, something odd happened today because our host, the late Patty Fink, is not going to be with us today. Mm-hmm. Normally, I get a call at 20 of that says, you know, it's, hi, I'm running a little bit late. Get it every week. So it's a quarter of. I don't get the call. So
it's
I called Patty. And she said, I'm in the elevator.
Yes. So that's the key.
That's the key. We have
to have
her
as a guest.
No, you have to have her and me as a guest.
Yeah, okay. That's
okay,
nice.
Yo, who drove?
Me?
I did.
She drove.
Oh, Patty
but
drove.
I'm a Virgo going, we got to go. Let's go. Come on, we're going. So, yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what it is, too. It's got go and Virgo.
Okay, so here's the reason that we're doing what we're doing.
The anal is silent.
On Friday.
Huh? Never mind.
Okay, they're on the other side of the desk. I can't even see them where they're sitting. So they're just having this little party over there on the other part of the... here's what happened Friday. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals heard three cases, three marriage equality cases. The first one they heard at 9 a.m. was from Louisiana. At 10 a.m. they heard Mississippi, and at 11 a.m. they heard Texas.
They didn't stick to that schedule.
They didn't
really
stick to that schedule, but that was the schedule.
It was about an hour behind. Yeah, they were running about an
almost
hour
an
behind.
Hour behind, about 50 minutes or so by the end of the morning. What happened was there were about 14 reporters in the room who had credentials.
Maybe 20
by
the
time
it was.
Okay, so about 20 reporters had credentials. One of them was our own, the late. The late Patty Fink had credentials to be inside. So she got to sit inside the court, very small courtroom, right?
Yes, very small.
There were no spectators in that room, were there?
Oh, yeah, there were spectators. It was a very big, kind of wood-paneled, ornate courtroom. And there was a row for the plaintiffs. And, of course, the attorneys were all up front, you know, across the rail. And then there was a place for the attorneys for the other cases got to sit in the courtroom, the ones coming after Louisiana. And then there was about three rows of media, and there were another probably three rows, and they added chairs in for spectators. And what they did was they had Louisiana folks lined up outside. Aaron can talk more about that, who were allowed to come in for Louisiana, and then they had to shuffle out. They gave us this little sticky on our clothes that said press, so that they could distinguish who can stay and who has to leave. And then when Mississippi came in, Mississippi group came in, and then you know, lastly, Texas had different spectators. So that's basically how it worked. And they had actually chairs inside the rail. And I think they were staffers. I think they were people who were from the court mm-hmm. who were allowed to come in and watch that.
Yeah, that's typical.
Yeah,
especially in big, important cases like that.
Yeah, the line outside that was long, but not as long as I've seen it for some other cases. And I think everybody who wanted to get in got in, either to the courtroom itself or to one of the overflow rooms to hear the live audio, which was great because after Louisiana started, after it convened, you know, I went up and said, you know, are there any spots left? And she was like, no, Louisiana's full, but we still have about 5 for Mississippi and about 10 for Louisiana or 10 for Texas. Of course, Texas was not going to be for another couple of hours, mm-hmm. and it did fill up, but they were just giddy. The people that were taking names and giving out numbers, they did like a ticket system. There was like, we've never had this before. Mm-hmm. We've never had to deal with this before. There's so many people here.
There was that much excitement about it.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was, of the 20 or so reporters that were there, we were the only ones who did what we were doing. Patty was inside. Aaron was outside. I was sitting in my office and getting things reported and online from the pieces that they were sending me. Patty was getting me quotes. Aaron was getting me pictures. And I put it together, and people were quoting us, including – this is what annoyed me. Okay, not that things generally annoy me, but people were saying to me, hey, did you see what the advocate said? Hey, did you see what this one said? They weren't there. They were copying our reporting, and people are reading other people's reporting. But I did see on Twitter a number of people, they were saying, hey, where can I get information? And they were saying, do hashtag Fifth Circuit, at Chris Geidner, who's a wonderful reporter for BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
And he's been in the gay press before. He was – who was he with before?
He had his own blog, didn't he?
Before that.
No. He was next to me in the court.
So, yeah.
It was fun.
Do at Chris Geidner and at David Taffet. And I saw dozens of those go through because I was looking for it after I saw somebody that I knew do it. All these people I didn't know were because we were the only ones who did what we did with this tag team. Because, Patty, in the courtroom, you couldn't bring electronics.
No. That was a big bugaboo the whole morning. We were told that it had to be off, and in the written instructions it said not even in airplane mode, must be off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when we went through what they called security for the media, several people had recorders and such, and they took those away from them. They said they could have those back afterward.
Oh. But an iPhone or something can record. So.
Right, but they let you have those, but they had to be off. Well, after the Louisiana case, we were told we couldn't leave the courtroom, period. But I saw several people get up, including Chris Geidner, and so I followed along and went outside. They were just standing out in the hallway. And because they did this people shuffle back and forth to get more spectators in, different spectators in, there was quite a break. So it was 20, 30 minutes. And so we stood outside the courtroom in the hallway, and everybody was on their phones. And so, of course, I was, and I was trying to get stuff over to David. And then they said, okay, we can come back in. Well, after Mississippi, boy, they clamped that down big time. From inside the court and outside the court, they were getting the media to shut it down.
Well, because they were starting to see news reports outside, and we were talking about that. It's like, how are people posting already? Because somebody from the New Orleans Advocate already had something posted.
So I guess they had somebody inside and outside also.
The Advocate?
Right. Yeah. They must have. Either that or...
Well, here's the deal with the New Orleans Advocate. They left.
They left. Okay.
They stayed for the Louisiana case, and then they left.
They left and then reported on it. Yeah, right. And they used – I think they used an AP photo.
So I was determined
– who I was talking to all day. All the photographers were talking all day.
I was determined we were going to have something up online before Channel 5, Channel 8, Channel 11, and the Morning News and the Star-Telegram. And you know what? We did. We beat them by hours.
Good. Yay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the tag team thing, it was sort of the plan once I knew both of us were going to go, that only one of us be inside, because mm-hmm. I didn't know how that was going to work. I didn't know she'd be able to feed me or text me or whatever, and then I could relay it. But most of the people that sent somebody sent one person, and they had to make the choice, either right. be outside and take pictures or be inside and hear the case, and almost everybody chose to be inside. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Because it was cold.
Yeah.
It was really cold.
Well, as cold there as it was here.
Besides that, I mean, the story's inside, but you can't report the story from inside, so it was...
Well, and you know what? For most people, it wasn't urgent that they heard the news at 10 in the morning, what happened between 9 and 10. Noon was fine.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that kind of an urgency.
So with three separate cases, did one stand out? Was like, this is the one that most people were more interested in, or they all three were kind of equally?
Oh, there was equal interest in all of them. And when you looked over, it was really moving to me to see the plaintiffs. There was a bench for the plaintiffs, and in some cases two benches, where the plaintiffs came in and sat down. It's very personal for them.
Absolutely.
Very personal. And lots of people... earnestly very interested in this case because they're gay or lesbian or they're in couples, and this is about them. And mm-hmm. each state had that whole new kind of earnestness that came in the room, you know. So it wasn't, I don't know, it was just very interesting to me. And then what struck me too, and Aaron kind of got this outside too, was Louisiana was the first, and they were in there for a long time because they were able to get everybody in and make them wait. You know, so the getting them in was done. Because mm-hmm. I think the staff was a little nervous about how it was all going to play out. They wanted to be like a, you know, on time and get everybody going. And then they left, and in came Mississippi, and I just noted to Chris Geidner that, wow, this room's colorful now. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of folks from Mississippi just wore like jeans and t-shirts and stuff. And mm-hmm. here we were at the Fifth Circuit. But... you know, it was very different from Louisiana.
You presented yourself well for yes. Lambda Weekly. You were dressed nicely.
I was dressed nicely.
You were dressed good for radio.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the Mississippi case had particular significance because of the lawyer, Roberta mm-hmm. Kaplan, who argued the Windsor case before the Supreme Court.
Right.
And won.
And Roberta Kaplan, who did argue the Windsor case and the Mississippi case, Patty, you talked to her. She said she'd be happy to come on as a guest.
Yeah, she said she'd be happy to come on.
So we'll have her in a few weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about, you know, me being outside was people would come out, especially the plaintiffs would come out just for a break or to get some air or something. So I had, like, one-on-ones with them, especially the Louisiana guys. And they were just beaming. Mm-hmm. They thought it was going so well. And that snowballed through the day. By the time Texas was heard, I think the judges had already heard the arguments twice. And we're having a hard time justifying the other side.
Let's talk about the three cases, because the three cases actually revolved around different things.
Yes.
I mean, it's all the same nonsense, but it revolved around different things. Louisiana's central point was procreation.
Yes.
Procreation. We have to marry for procreation. Okay. So Higginbotham was the swing vote. There were three judges. Let me just point this out. Three judges. Two were appointed by Reagan. One, his name was Smith. Very conservative. His rulings are always conservative.
And he presided.
He was the presiding judge because Higginbotham, who has more tenure, is a senior judge, meaning basically in retirement but still carrying a full schedule. Mm-hmm. So Smith was the presiding judge. Smith, very conservative. We don't really – we didn't go into this expecting him to come down on the side of equality. Graves was appointed by Obama. No question he's for equality. Higginbotham's the swing vote. He's somebody who – the interesting thing about him is when Judge Bork was borked in the Supreme – in Congress and didn't get that get the position on the Supreme Court, all the Republicans who knew Higginbotham were saying to Reagan at the time, okay, appoint this guy. He's a good guy. And Reagan was so annoyed about not getting his appointee, about not getting Bork onto the Supreme Court, that he refused. He didn't want to listen to what other Republicans were telling him to do, and he found Anthony Kennedy.
Right, and Kennedy's life been such a
Kennedy
champion.
Kennedy has been the champion, but you know what? It seems like Higginbotham is a very similar person, and he might come out in favor of marriage equality, too. Okay, so Louisiana was talking about procreation. That was their main argument. What was what were some of the questions that were asked?
I was really taken aback that almost immediately Judge Higginbotham, who's the swing vote, began asking questions. For one, the state of Louisiana, and I'm talking about in the rebuttal, because in the Louisiana case, our plaintiffs lost. And so they went first. And I have to say Camilla Taylor from Lambda Legal was brilliant. And she was a thinker on her feet. I mean, they asked questions and she shot right back. And then the attorney who represented Louisiana got up and they just started peppering him with questions. And they began with Judge Higginbotham. And you could just tell from his questions that what he was thinking all the way through. And he was very consistent throughout the day. It was very rare that he kind of threw up. I remember one point thinking, oh, that's the only time he's ever kind of come at it from a conservative point of view. Because the rest of the time he was completely pretty liberal.
Well, but he wanted – being a conservative, and he is – I went through a number of his rulings, and he's had some liberal rulings. There have been a couple of times where he and Graves, the Obama appointee, have sided together over the last couple of years on cases where they've served together. But he would come at it and want the answer partially so that he could know how to rebut it.
Right. Right.
So, okay,
and he was very interesting, too, and this is just for the whole morning. He would – every time he asked a question, he would lean up in his chair and lean on his desk and be very engaged. And remind you that the lectern that the attorneys were speaking from was like 4 feet in front of them. They were very, very close, right up in their faces. And but every time he asked a question, he'd lean way back in his chair and just kind of have a conversation. And, you know, if you listen to some of the recordings, he's very difficult to hear. He was difficult to hear in the courtroom, but it did resonate somewhat. I mean, we could get what he was saying, but everybody was quiet as a pin, you know, like pin drop.
I have a suggestion.
Right.
Body mics.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so what are some of the questions?
So Louisiana, in that particular case, was talking about referring to this case Turner, which had to do with a gay man in incarceration who was being was deliberately put into a situation where he was repeatedly raped. And so, you know, they were kind of rebutting that. Some of the judges saying that's not really what the case here. This is not a comparison. But then the Louisiana guy, and so Higginbotham did that. He pointed out that's not really what's going on here. This is not related, really. And Louisiana was talking about this deeply rooted right to marry. And I thought, is he arguing for us? That there is this deeply rooted right to marry and that the state can choose what to dignify. And so Higginbotham said, what is the justification for having sexual orientation as a qualifier by the state? And there had been some discussion of Loving v. Virginia, and Louisiana's answer was procreation. Mm-hmm. And so Higginbotham says, I'm talking about an immutable characteristic. Basically, how is sexual orientation different from race as a differentiator between issues in Loving and sexual orientation in Robichaux, which is the case for Louisiana? And so it was really kind of interesting to see his questions. Especially throughout the day. But for Louisiana, they spend an enormous amount of time talking about procreation and lots of shooting down. Graves talked about...
That was their argument. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the questions that Higginbotham asked was, well, if procreation is the basis for marriage, why do we let the incarcerated get married? I mean, what's his name, the murderer in California?
Manson.
He's getting married.
He's getting married.
Yeah. What for? I mean, seriously, what for?
So they have more rights
than people,
we do.
What about people who are sterile?
Right. What about people who, and he asked about sterile, what about the elderly?
Well, that was actually, from what I understand, that was addressed later in some of the other cases, Texas primarily.
Also. Uh-huh.
Yeah, about how that's not part of a, it doesn't they were saying it doesn't have to be a good fit,
mm-hmm.
a perfect fit, that it's imperfect fit, that's the majority of the cases that people get married to have kids. And justices were not buying it,
mm-hmm.
not buying it at all. And people were coming out.
Well, because one of the justices, I think it was Higginbotham, didn't he, or was it Graves, who pointed out, well, here in the Louisiana case, some of the plaintiffs have kids and they're raising kids. You're saying it's better that kids are raised by two-parent households, and you're preventing them from having two-parent households.
Right.
You're saying marriage is stabilizing. Well, here are these families raising kids. Why shouldn't they be stabilized? We're going to talk more about this. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, with Ron Landis, and Aaron Moore. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is William. I download Lambda Weekly podcast from LambdaWeekly.com.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. And Aaron Moore is here with us, too. Aaron and Patty were in Louisiana, in New Orleans, at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to hear three marriage equality cases. Patty was inside the court. Aaron was outside the court. Aaron, what was the feeling outside the court?
Well, it was, like I said earlier, it was interesting because people would come out between the cases. Either they were leaving after their particular case or they were involved in the, you know, interested parties who would come out at the breaks because they weren't as restricted as the press was. The press could not leave, period. And some of them were smokers, so they'd come out and talk to me. But one of the guys who was a lawyer for Louisiana, I think he was I think he wrote an amicus brief for them. For
the state?
No, he's with the Forum for Equality. He's
okay,
one of their
so
legal...
Oh, for the plaintiffs.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he said that something interesting was happening after the Mississippi case. He said, you know, we were talking about how it kept snowballing and the justices were hearing the same arguments and starting to get a feeling for how they were thinking. Well, he said that he thought that the Mississippi... case actually helped the Louisiana case because the lawyer from Mississippi was so scattered and so unable to defend his argument that it shored up the Louisiana arguments, which I thought was a really interesting way of looking at it. You know, it was not like, yeah, we've heard this, okay, we're kind of getting the idea here.
Well, and the Mississippi attorney for the plaintiffs was Roberta Kaplan.
Right.
Who, there's Ted Boyson, Ted Olson and David Boyce.
Right.
They're the Lambda legal attorneys, and then there's Roberta Kaplan. She's the one who won Windsor. She's she's an attorney that pleads before the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and I guess the way the Mississippi people got her was they probably just called her office and said, if we win Mississippi, we win it.
Right.
So, and she said, yeah, I'd love to win this one in Mississippi. And she went down to Mississippi, pled before the district court, won, pled before the appeals court, and is going to win.
And I can't remember who I talked to, and I said, how did Mississippi get Roberta Kaplan? They said they asked her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm telling you what she was thinking. We can ask her when she's on. I'm sure she's thinking, you know what? Mm-hmm. New Jersey. Eh. But Mississippi, I want to win Mississippi.
Well, and the I don't want to say it's rumor, but kind of what I heard about why Akin Gump is defending the Texas defendants is they did not want this case to be bound or restricted by resources. Mm-hmm. So they just said, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. And that's their pro bono project mm-hmm. for the year, you know. And they said they didn't want it to have to be restricted by nonprofit organizations trying to raise funds and expend resources. They said, we'll just do it, mm-hmm. which I think is really
awesome.
Aren't
they the ones who also did the Texas divorce case?
I think so.
I think they did.
Yeah.
So they were a logical one to do it because they've been working in this area.
They have a long history of social justice cases.
And you know
cases.
What? There are a number of lesbians who work for them.
No, really? Had no idea.
Okay, so the Louisiana case revolved around procreation. Let's just move on a little bit. The second case was Mississippi, and the Mississippi case revolved around, well, this isn't really about constitutional rights. This is about social policy.
Yes. That was
explain
this most bizarre thing. Well, they were talking about it being sort of a general – this was an issue about social policy, like what to do with those gay people. Let's experiment with that, you know, kind of – you know, versus a constitutional right.
Those people.
How can you not ever take the Constitution into consideration?
I know. It was bizarre.
You know, kind of like when we're deciding whether to – you know, take off Friday if the 4th of July is on a Thursday. You take off Friday, too. That's, you know, have an extra picnic. It's social policy.
Well, the Mississippi guy did actually kind of scatter around. I tell you, the room was riveted when Roberta Kaplan took the lectern because she talks really fast. She's projects in the courtroom when you listen to – and I encourage everyone to go listen to – the recordings of these oral arguments. It's 30 minutes each side, and whoever's appealing the case goes first, and then the other side goes through 30 minutes, and then the other side reserved a few minutes to rebut anything they offered. And of course, the judges were free to pepper them with questions throughout.
Okay, so Roberta Kaplan, before she even started her own arguments, Roberta Kaplan's doing the second case, which is Mississippi, but she rebutted Louisiana.
Yes. One of the first things she says when she gets to the lectern is, I want to correct my brother from Louisiana, meaning the state of Louisiana's attorney, in that he had basically argued that the state of New York, had there not been marriage equality passed in the state of New York, there would be no Windsor. And she very quickly rebutted him and said, and this is the guy from the previous hour, a different case. She says, I just want to correct my brother from Louisiana. You know, Windsor and Edie and Theo were married in Canada.
Right.
New York had marriage equality.
Yeah,
exactly. Nothing to do with New York. Right.
You know, so in terms of like tying them all together, that was like immediately because she was, I'm like chomping at the
and
bit.
The case started before marriage equality was in, before New York got marriage equality.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, she started her case several years ago, right after Theo died.
And that was specifically about DOMA. I mean, that's what got struck down was Section 3 of DOMA. But it was just very interesting. And then she has such a presence, and she carries herself so well in court. And hopped on any question they had. She was ready.
You know what? Just the argument that, well, if New York hadn't passed this law, there wouldn't have been a Windsor, and then we wouldn't have to be here in Texas.
If it wasn't legal, it'd be illegal.
Yeah. But
what?
You know what? Right. But New York did pass that law. And if that is the reason that the case got to the Supreme Court, which it wasn't, but if it was... So
what? Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but that doesn't count. That's a New York law. It doesn't apply to us here in Texas.
That logic was almost through the whole day. It's like if it wasn't illegal, if it wasn't legal, it'd be illegal. You know, and it was really just them trying to turn back the clock.
So, okay, so then we get to the Mississippi case, which is, this is social policy, not constitutional rights. What did Roberta Kaplan have to say about that? I don't care what the Mississippi attorney said, because it's just a stupid argument.
I'll tell you, it's one of the most compelling things that she talked about, and this was, of course, where during the Mississippi presentation, because they were appealing, this is where Higginbotham has famously now said, you don't need an incentive to have sex, because he was talking about procreation. You know, the whole topic was procreation.
Okay, so the Mississippi attorneys are arguing – Mississippi? This was during Mississippi that he said that. Okay. The Mississippi attorneys are talking about, we let people marry so that they have an incentive to procreate, to have children. And Higginbotham, through the morning, was just getting more and more frustrated.
You could tell by
the questions that were going on, the way he was wording the questions. During Louisiana, they were friendly. During Mississippi, they were a little bit more frustrating. But here's where he turned, and he was just frustrated. Because they're arguing that straight people are not going to have children if they don't have marriage. Because nobody gets pregnant out of wedlock. And especially in Mississippi, which has, you know, thank God for Mississippi. Texas is only the second highest out of wedlock childbirth rate. Mississippi is the highest. What a stupid argument. So he just said, you don't need an incentive to have sex. The way he said it, you knew that the rest of the sentence was, you stupid.
Well, and he said it just so matter-of-factly, you don't need an incentive to have sex. Like, come on.
Like,
well,
really?
My other was the rational versus irrational, if you want to talk about that.
How did that even come about?
Well, I just wanted to talk about something about when he talked about this incentive to have sex. So in the courtroom, among the spectators were people from Mississippi. And of course, Mississippi's right next to Louisiana, so of course many of them drove. And they brought their kids. And the kids were in the courtroom. And this one woman had a couple had their baby with a stroller. And the baby started crying. And right after Higginbotham said that you don't need to have an incentive to have sex, and they were bantering back and forth about procreation, this baby just lets out a, you know, starts crying. And Judge Graves leaned in and said, right on cue. You know what I mean? It made it real in the courtroom that
talk about
people.
Theatrics.
Yeah, it was perfectly timed, too.
Oh,
it was a
wow.
real break in, this,
okay,
in the conversation.
Awesome that they brought their kids.
Yeah.
So one of the arguments, Mississippi and Louisiana, you can't have a two-parent adoption unless you're married. Gay or straight, doesn't matter. You have to be married to do a two-parent adoption. Texas, you can. You have to do it in two steps, but Texas, you can. But in Louisiana and Mississippi, you can't. So the attorneys for the state are arguing it's to the advantage of a child to have two parents. And was it Graves or was it Higginbotham who asked something to the effect of, so what are you arguing for same-sex marriage here? Because our plaintiffs have kids.
Right.
And you're saying that they shouldn't get married, but it's better for them to be married for the kids. So which is it?
It was confusing. I have to say it was confusing at the time because you didn't know what's coming. We had no like they didn't give us their arguments beforehand, and so we could follow along kind of. And you're trying to follow along their logic, just as I'm sure the judges are. It was just bizarre. I mean, like the Louisiana guy was arguing for, that there's a distinct right to marry. You know, I'm like, really? Because that's kind of helpful to us.
All right.
You know? So, but what was interesting, too, was the one of the things that Roberta Kaplan pointed out in her kind of opening at the lectern, because it was very quickly they were asking questions, and so you didn't get to keep on your planned argument. She said that according to the Williams Institute at UCLA, Mississippi has the highest number of gays and lesbians with children, 29%.
Get out of here.
29%
really?
Is
the highest percentage. Texas has the most gay people raising children. Mississippi has the highest percentage.
But even the highest percentage, that's surprising in Mississippi.
In Mississippi.
Well,
and when
you're surprising that gay people stay in Mississippi.
That's too.
But and then you looked around the room and there were these kids.
I have family in Mississippi. I love you, Mississippi.
So, and they were talking about you know, rational basis, and so was Texas. They were talking about this whole rational basis. And yet, I thought Roberta Kaplan was brilliant in so many things that she said. But one of the things that she talked about was if you can recognize that gay people deserve dignity and they are equal to other people and they have the right to be treated with dignity, all the other arguments fade away. They fall away. Because that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about this rational basis. And she quoted back lines from opinions that each one of those judges in front of her had said before.
Including Smith. He's the conservative of the three.
Right.
Yeah.
Where they described rational basis as, you know, basically you can't make up stuff. Not everything is a rational basis. There's not always, you know, that kind of – it doesn't qualify. You can't just – a legislature can't just make up a law out of nothing and expect it to
– Oh, wait. Texas is.
No, Texas is trying to.
Okay, trying
so,
to.
So
yeah.
Here's what somebody filed this week. I hope this is the first law passed. I hope this law is signed into law by our governor, Abbott. And this law, it's not going to make it illegal to issue the licenses because the Supreme Court will rule that all states have to allow people to marry. But what it'll do is it'll take away the salary and the pension for anybody who issues that license. Now, here's the reason that I hope it's first. I want the first law that Greg Abbott signs into law to be overturned by the Supreme Court immediately, and they will.
Yeah, this goes to the Supreme Court, and a ruling comes down from the High Court, and marriage equality is in all 50 states in the District of Columbia.
Well, but the if law the Supreme of the land. Court rules that marriage equality is across the country, you can't penalize people for doing what the Supreme Court has ruled.
For being legal.
Right. Yeah. You can't penalize people for doing what the Supreme Court told them to do. For following the law and doing their job as described by the Texas whatever that says what a county clerk does. You can't do that.
Well,
I hope it passes. I hope it's signed. Boy, this will be fun.
Well, the law that proposed law that David is talking about is just some of the reaction from the other side since the hearings. And pretty much they are kind of like, I guess, admitting defeat before defeat has even been announced. So
I've heard mostly hysteria and anger. And our attorney general issued a really nasty statement after the ruling, after the hearing.
It's almost as if they've already admitted defeat.
Yeah,
though.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, most of them are like, you know, this is wrong, and they haven't even gotten.
We don't know if we will get a ruling.
Understand that the arguments were that bad. Okay, now, Laron, why might we not get a ruling?
Well, because if the Supreme Court before the end of this month decides to take on this Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals case, what are four cases out of that?
Well, there are six cases out of the Sixth Circuit, and then one, the Louisiana case,
right,
also was appealed to the Supreme Court at the same time.
So if the Supreme Court takes one or all of those cases, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals could just say, well, we're just going to wait and see what they rule. I mean, they don't have to issue a ruling.
You know, I was talking to Ken Upton. Here's what he said. You know, it's a lot of work to write a 100-page
opinion ruling.
Yeah. And it would either be one very long opinion, because they did present different cases. They tried to argue different things. So it'll be either one long ruling or three rulings.
Three rulings, because consolidate these.
The 11th Circuit, Utah and Oklahoma, those were separate rulings, mm-hmm, even though it's the exact same thing. But they were separate rulings, just answering the arguments from those cases. So, but because they were heard same day, chances are it'll be one ruling. But that means 100 to 150 pages, unless they're just real short and real curt. But there's so much stuff here. You know, they'd have to, in order for them to bother, they'd have to write a detailed ruling. If they come down on the side of anti-marriage equality, judges don't like to be overturned by the Supreme Court.
And it almost certainly would be.
And it almost certainly would be, yeah.
Pretty much the general consensus says there's probably going to be a 2-1 decision in our favor.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but do you think there's a chance it'll be a 3-0?
Oh, I don't know.
You saw Smith in action. Do you think he could come down on the side of marriage equality or no?
And I don't
think
ask
he,
that.
I don't think he plans to. I think he made up his mind before he went in because he just kept hammering Baker v. Nelson, the imperfect fit, and to which both Roberta Kaplan and Neil Lane for Texas said, this is not an imperfect fit. There is no fit. There is no connection between procreation and marriage in terms of who gets to have it. So if older couples, if couples who don't want to have straight couples who don't want to have children, that's not an imperfect fit.
You
that's
know what
a,
marriage
that's
is about?
No fit
it's not
to say.
About procreation. A lot of people who are married do have kids. It's about how you pay your taxes. It's about what benefits you get and how those benefits are given to you as a couple. It's about all kinds of things like that, hospital visitation,
yep,
responsibility for paying off a credit card when your husband or wife dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what marriage is about in this country, legal marriage. I'm not talking about religious marriage at all.
No, I agree with you. And,
that's
you know, as much
is.
As we like to say, you know, marriage is about love, well, legally, it's not even about that.
Not legally.
Legally, because, I mean, there's nothing that fills out that says, do you swear that you're in love with this person you're married?
And religiously,
no.
Not either.
No.
Religiously, almost all religions had arranged marriages.
Exactly.
Until very recently, and when I say very recently, the last 100 years or so, and it's changed. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis, late Patty Fink, and Aaron Moore. We're talking about the Fifth Circuit oral arguments that were heard on Friday. We will be back and talk about Texas.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, Loron Landis, and Aaron Moore. Patty, let's just sum up Mississippi. What else did you hear from that one?
Well, there was a lot of discussion in all three cases about rational basis. And one of the things that Roberta Kaplan pointed out very succinctly, she's very eloquent and concise in her argument, was that it fails on a rational basis and there is animus. And one of the things that was pointed out in the Texas case that Camilla Taylor had pointed out is that the Supreme Court in some case, I don't have the citation, said that animus could simply be a lack of understanding. It doesn't have to be an hostility and hatred. And so somebody challenged one of the justices, I think it was Smith, talking about his imperfect fit stuff again. And she came back with, as Justice Kennedy said, times can blind. And that was with reference to gay people in one of his rulings. And she said, times have blinded this country about African-American people. Times have blinded this country about women. Times have blinded this country about gay and lesbian people. And it was such a great line. And she just had a booming voice in the court. It was just it made me tear up. It was really powerful.
Okay, the third case was the Texas case. And the basic argument that Texas was arguing is that marriage is a subsidy.
Yes.
Like lunches.
Like lunches.
Yeah.
School lunches. They had a discussion about school
okay,
lunches.
Okay, now.
It's kind of a new one. I got to give it to them. That was a new one.
I give them credit for coming up with new crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, everything else is lost.
So why not? Okay, so school lunches in Dallas, they stopped evaluating students, and all students get school lunches because it was cheaper to give every student a school lunch than it was to run the program to give a voucher here and a voucher there, and you qualify, you don't, you have to submit this, you don't have to submit that. It was just cheaper to give every
just
kid
feed
lunch.
Them all.
So, okay, lunch subsidy, marriage subsidy. Everybody gets lunch, everybody gets marriage if they want it. You don't have to eat your lunch.
With
right.
an
you
apple.
You don't have to get married.
You don't have to.
But if you want to, you can.
I want my apple.
What the hell was their argument?
This is so follow along here. I'm trying to just right. But if once I get this right, then it'll be easy to talk about why so wrong. He was the guy from who's the Solicitor General from Texas, Jonathan Mitchell, was stating that there were really two points that the state had an interest in saying, and that it was all rational basis, not heightened scrutiny, not any form of anything else. It was rational basis. And that the state had two interests. One, to encourage couples to produce children. Two, to discourage unplanned out-of-wedlock births. So their argument is that gay people do not advance those state interests. So gay people getting married does not encourage couples to produce children. It does not discourage unplanned out-of-wedlock births.
Because if we keep it illegal... Oh, go ahead, finish.
So, but he was... right. He was... So he basically declared that marriage is a subsidy. And all of the justices sat up in their chairs, and a couple of them said, what?
And like, what did you say?
And the room, the people in the room were... What, you know, and
Graves who talked about school lunches?
Yeah, see, they had a they bantered about, you know, are you saying it's like a school lunch program? You know, and he said basically yes, because they're only targeting a certain set of kids, those who can't afford to have, you know.
Except in Dallas, where everybody gets it, so why don't we just have marriage for everybody in Dallas, because we understand it's okay for every kid to eat.
Kind of like Missouri and St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can only get married in St. Louis.
But Judge Graves was talking about, well, that's like a program for school kids eating lunch. This is about people's lives. And these are human beings that you know, share a life together, kind of thing. And so it was just really an interesting kind of thing. But they made, the judges in their questions made him say it several times. Texas believes that marriage is a subsidy and only a subsidy.
You know, and again, this fits right in with the Mississippi argument that you need to subsidize sex for straight people.
Yeah.
If we don't subsidize this, straight people just aren't. They're not going to get married. They're not going to have. They're not going to have sex. Therefore, they're not going to produce kids. You know. And Higginbotham's line: "You don't need an incentive to have sex," applies here too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What are you subsidizing?
Exactly, and it sort of built on everything through the day. And so when the Texas case started, it was pretty telling where they were going. Excuse me. And then one of the great ones of the day was when Texas said it's too soon to know what will happen with it. And again, this comes back to the whole social policy.
Meaning what's going to happen with gay marriage.
Yeah, well, how's that going to affect society and the future? And one of the things that Roberta Kaplan had done rather preemptively in the Mississippi case was to say, you know, and so people talk about, you know, what's going to happen, you know, and she says, you know, well, we've got an answer to that. There's been marriage in Massachusetts now for 10 years. Mm-hmm. The divorce rate hasn't gone up.
No, it's gone down.
And it hasn't restricted heterosexual people are marrying in the same rate that they were before.
Right.
So, you know, that argument is gone. There's mm-hmm. there's no basis for that. And yet Texas brought it up. The Solicitor General for Texas brought it up.
Well, because he had already written his speech.
Right, so Judge Graves says, well, what's your magic number? 5? 20?
Well, it's not 5 because Massachusetts is more than 10.
Right. And so Judge Higginbotham says, so you want to wait and see, like a wait and see is a noun. And he said, yes, basically, they want to see. And it just sounded so stupid because it's all been shot down
before.
Well,
see, that argument is the one that let's appeal it to the appeals court. Then we'll ask for an en banc hearing. Then we'll take it to the Supreme Court. And the reason for that isn't because, especially in the Ninth Circuit, the West Coast, which is the most liberal court, they've ruled again, and they've ruled again. Well, we want en banc because we think we're going to get a different ruling. Well, they know perfectly well they're not going to get a different ruling. They just want to delay it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the tactic now.
It is.
Let's just delay it.
Right. And so there was a question about animus and the definition of animus. And the Texas Solicitor General kept talking about animus. And so Judge Higginbotham said, what's behind this fear of homosexual people? Is it not animus? And so Judge Graves asked him, how do you define animus? And he said, irrational prejudice. That's the Texas Solicitor General mm-hmm. said, that Texas defines it as irrational mm-hmm. prejudice. And so Judge Higginbotham, from his lean back position in his chair, says, what is rational prejudice?
So it's a good question.
It is.
I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
But that's where I'm saying, reached this turning point in the Mississippi case where he just wasn't putting up with it anymore. He had had enough.
It was becoming the same stuff over and over. And I'm sure his wheels were turning about, for one, what is your rationale here? You know, we've heard your, you know, encourage people to have kids and discourage, you know, unwed or unplanned out of wedlock
unplanned
births.
Pregnancies.
You know, and like, how could gay people even impact that?
Yeah.
Like, if gay people got married, how does that
exactly
prevent people from having, you know, backseat experiences?
Well, but the argument that you want kids to grow up in a stable home, and marriage creates a stable home, and here are the plaintiffs with kids.
Right.
Now, the Texas case, the two from Austin have kids. In fact, one's pregnant, and they have one kid already.
One's pregnant, yeah. I mean, and the thing to me was they kept saying two parents is best for children. And I think they thought that the court was going to agree with them, that they never thought to include opposite gender mm-hmm. parents.
Because it, that's you know, their thinking.
Two parents equals man and a woman mm-hmm. to them. And it never even... After over three cases, it didn't occur to any of the lawyers to specify that, because all they kept saying was two parents. Well, here's two parents with a kid. So you're arguing for us? You know, it mm-hmm. was just it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And something.
Well, the only two parents with a kid that were involved in this case were gay parents mm-hmm. and lesbian parents,
right? Clea and Nicole.
Yeah.
Well, in the Texas case, yeah.
In the Texas case, but it was mixed.
In Mississippi, it was mostly
parents.
Yeah.
So when they were when they finally got him to define animus. As, you know, something reasonable definition. He said hatred, prejudice, bigotry. And Judge Higginbotham says, isn't animus more than that? And the Solicitor General for Texas said, yes, but that's not what's going on here. And so many people in the room gasped because that's exactly what's going on here. It's really, really pretty amazing.
Well, anybody who can argue that if you get married, if Patty, you and Aaron were to get married here in Texas, that's going to affect my marriage.
How huh? so?
Yeah, logic has never followed into this. You know, if they know anything about the gay and lesbian community, you know, it's got to be based in religion that they're trying to bring into a civil hearing. Mm-hmm. And it's just not ever going to work.
It's going to affect my religious...
Well, the cray-cray guy that I talked to after... was trying to say that your freedom is going to oppress my oppression, mm-hmm. essentially. You know, it was by you having this right, you're oppressing my right to discriminate against you. Was the summation?
That's essentially it.
Was this the mm-hmm. summation of his argument?
And the answer to that is, why, yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, Laron, you're not being able to sit at the Woolworths lunch counter is affecting my right to not have you sitting where I want to sit.
Essentially. Yeah.
I mean, it's the same argument. Right. It's the same argument for discrimination. I want to discriminate against you not getting married, even though it in no way affects my getting married. I don't want you to sit at the lunch counter because I don't want to sit at the same counter as you, and your sitting there affects my right to not want to sit with you.
Yeah,
it's the exact same argument.
I mean, they were twisting in knots afterwards.
Well, there was
too.
One line that Higginbotham used. Do you have this? Those words?
I don't know.
Oh, those words, "Will Mississippi change its mind?" Have resonated in these halls before, is what Higginbotham said. Was that at the end of the Texas case?
No, at the end of the Mississippi case.
Right. What he was saying to them by saying that was this. All of you people who are arguing against, you're the same bigots that were arguing against black people sitting at the lunch counter, black kids and white kids going to school together, black kids and white kids, you know, whatever. It's the same argument.
Oh, it's exactly the same argument. I just want to throw out a quick line from Judge Graves when they were talking in the Texas case about Loving v. Virginia and Minnesota's Baker v. Nelson, and then what gay life was like for gay people in the 70s. And they were going on and on about that. Well, in 1972, you know, people were still in the closet. They could lose their jobs. They could be put in jail, all of this. And Judge Graves chimed in. He says, all of this talk about Baker v. Nelson is in the 70s is making me nostalgic for my Afro and my 8-track tapes.
Did he really?
He did. He
That's
did.
That's awesome.
It was quite a line.
Well, he's obviously, from his rulings that I've read, he's the it-getter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there. I mean, the brand new judge on this court, and he's not kowtowing to the judges who have more experience at all. You know, he came in and hit the ground running, and he has been disagreeing left and right with the other Fifth Circuit judges.
Well, and at the press conference after everything, it was striking to me that even Roberta Kaplan commented on this. She said, wow, you guys are easy. Because all of the questions were, so after you win this, you know, cause everybody in the courtroom thought that the state's cases were not made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that even if you believe otherwise, just from a legal standpoint, that the state's cases were not made.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And any predictions on when? I think we will get a ruling.
Well, I just want to say that the Neil Lane at the end of the Texas case, when they right before they say the case is submitted,
mm-hmm.
He said, I join with Texas in urging you to take up this case and render an opinion regardless of what the high court might do in its conference today.
Hmm.
So I'm hoping they certainly do a ruling.
You know, there is a reason for them to issue a ruling in favor of marriage equality. And that would be one more court weighing in. They'd be weighing in on different arguments than the other courts have weighed in on. I mean, they're all stupid arguments, but they can debunk more arguments here. And it just backs up the Supreme Court when they issue their ruling that, you know, now how many courts? There are 11 circuit courts. The sixth voted against, and two courts have not weighed in yet. So,
11th and the fifth.
Yeah,
they're the only ones.
No, and also the one North Dakota, South Dakota. What is that, the seventh?
Oh.
I think that's the seventh. So three courts either were against or haven't weighed in. Fifth Circuit now might weigh in. The reason for them to do it is to be on the right side of history, to just give a couple more arguments and debunk more arguments, go on the record. And especially with as nasty as Texas is planning on being already, they might want to go on record so that when Texas does stupid things like this, the court can say, I don't think you read my ruling. So
right.
There is that reason. One thing they wouldn't want to do, if Higginbotham were to go against, which from his
I kind of really doubt
not,
it's, it. If you
not.
Were in the heard all of it, it's clear how but, he's thinking.
Yeah, I mean, you stupid was at the end of the sentence that he didn't say, just like we don't say that on the air.
Right.
But if they were going to rule against, judges don't like to be overturned by higher courts, and that would be a reason not to rule.
And Judge Smith, in fact, said that at some point in one of the cases. You know, well, we're very familiar with that case because the Supreme Court overturned us, our opinion on that case.
Yeah, they don't like that.
They don't like it.
They don't like that at all. Younger judges, it reflects on them. If you're a judge that has been overturned a number of times, you're not going to get an appointment or even be considered for the Supreme Court.
Right.
You're just not. So they don't want to do that.
And I just want to say quickly, I admire all of the plaintiffs in this case. That's a long time. These are not things that happen overnight.
Not at
it
all.
It just takes a long part of your life. And I just admire all of the plaintiffs in Louisiana, in Mississippi, and certainly in
Texas.
Money
out of their pockets.
Yeah, and it's and
the
it's,
court didn't fly them down to New Orleans. That came out of their own pockets.
Sure. And it's very personal to them, and mm-hmm. it feels personal to me too, and all of us out here. And so I just say kudos to all of them, and they were all there very proudly. And it was really cool to see.
Thanks for the great reporter work, both of you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Next week we have Chuck Smith from Equality Texas. He'll be talking about the legislative agenda or the car wreck that's coming up in Austin,
and also about this.
The hearings.
He was there.
He was there. Roberta Kaplan's coming up. DeLeon and Dimitman, who are the Austin plaintiffs in the Texas case, they're coming up. We don't have the exact date. We think the week after.
We're scheduling that.
But we will be scheduling them, and we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.